It's August 11th, 2019. This is episode 128 of Fancy Ramen, Fancy Ramen Podcast, if we're being specific. This week, we cover a wide variety of topics, including a quick follow-up on Fire Emblem, Three Houses.
I introduced Scott and Neil to the boys.
Cookie also talks about his experiences with Black Desert Online.
Then we get to witness a crime. I mean, Scott gives us a little bit of nifty information on The Witness.
All this on episode 128. There are spoilers to Fire Emblem Three Houses, sort of on the boys and sort of on The Witness.
Episode 128, Spoiler City. Let's go.
Is it weird that I don't know what Cooking Mama is?
Well, very. I mean, the name should give it away.
Well, is it any different from...
Say Diner Dash, I dare you.
No, I was thinking of...
Fucking dare you.
Okay, all right. Just to give you an idea of how little I know about this game, I first was thinking of Fat Princess.
Which is, yeah, a... completely different game.
Also, a game that doesn't involve cooking. It just involves a fat lady.
Yeah, well, not exactly. You make her fat. You stuff cake into her, right? I think they start out small, and you make them bigger with all the cake you stuff into them.
So can you play Fat Princess and not eat anything? Or does the game force you to be a glutton?
I think if you want to win, you have to feed the fat princess. You don't actually play as the princess and fat princess. It's like it's almost like capture the flag with food, except the princess eats the flag every time you bring it to her.
If there's anything I learned from recent news, it's that video games make us all very violent. So this is also why like America is obese, because of games like Fat Princess.
Right, and that's why Cooking Mama is trying to change the narrative by introducing healthy meals in 10 minutes or less and the instructions on how to do so with their new release.
So is it different? Like, how is it different from, say, Overcooked?
I've never played. I don't know. I just happen to have the game sitting on top of my coffee table.
Okay.
I too, have never played.
I can ask Sierra real quick.
No, it's fine. She's played. It's fine. It'll be something I'll have to discover on my own later. But while we're talking about eating healthy, really, really off topic from video games, just for a second, but I had an Impossible Burger from Burger King.
Oh, I forgot they had Impossible Burgers.
They just started it. It was actually the best vegan / vegetarian, I don't know if it's vegan or not, burger I've ever had.
It is vegan. Yeah, it's vegan. Those Impossible Burgers are one, like, a amazing feat of engineering in, like, food science. And I can explain how they're made if you want to go into it. Or I could just tell you that it is the, like, best burger on the market if you want to eat something that is quote unquote meaty. Also, Cooking Mama is a game in which you essentially perform cooking mini games. So you like chop your vegetables and then you fry it in the pan and you're following a recipe the whole time for each mini game that you do.
So it's about the finer details, whereas Overcooked is about working together as a team.
Right. No, Cooking Mama doesn't need anybody else in her kitchen. She'll throw you out.
Interesting. I'll have to check it out. Guys, it's episode 128. I don't have much to say outside of I beat Three Houses.
Oh, boy. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty to talk about for Three Houses. I can't wait to hear how far Cookie's gotten and if his path has deviated from yours as a Black Eagle.
I don't have much to add beyond what I said on 127B. Our 127 chopped up B. The fact that I have just gotten past the... Oh, actually, no, I did get like one mission further where the... Because, Scott, you're further than me as well.
I mean, who's to say?
Neil is to say. Scott's further than me, right, Neil?
Oh, yeah, for sure. If you've only played one more hour or so or one more mission, Scott, you are way past him.
Okay. So I just had the three houses battle against each other, and Emperor Cornwallis, he's now the librarian Cornwallis is evil now. And I just decided that Dorothea was going to be my lady of the dance.
Good choice. I would have to say I also made her my lady of the dance. I did trick Neil into thinking that I chose Lorenz, though. I made a save file specifically to get the shot of Lorenz doing it so I could send a photo to Neil and say, guess who's my dancing man? But no, I went back and fixed that mistake because that would have been a terrible option.
You know, we all three use Dorothea as the dancer, and
she's already a singer. It's like it's in her blood.
The only thing that like makes me regret doing it is that there's a special skill that you get as a dancer. It's like a sword skill, and the stat
she has the weakest strength stat I've ever seen.
Although like if you had started with her like in Black Eagles and raised her as like a mercenary, or
mine's a mercenary,
you probably would have gotten better stat growth there, because I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe the class has a much bigger stat growth effect on stat growth than the character does. I think there's a degree of like the character having some influence on it, but I think if you had raised her as a fighter from the beginning, she probably would be more suitable. But I had her as like my primary mage, which obviously kind of shifted and she became more hybrid afterwards. But I regret not giving it to Petra.
Oh, that would be a good choice. Yeah, you just need to break a charisma of 15, from what I understand.
Actually, that depends on who's left.
Okay.
So
damn. So if you say if you play shitty.
No. I mean like who's left in the houses that you have not been able to recruit.
Oh.
Because at that point I had everyone except Raphael, Sylvain, and then, you know, the characters you can't recruit. So my opponents were Raphael and Dimitri.
Who I think both have, they probably both have abysmal charisma, don't they?
Yeah, so I think I had to have 11, according to Manuel.
Oh, that's damn. Even better then, yeah. And also, why am I so bad at recruiting students? I truly only was able to snipe like two from each house that wasn't mine.
Okay, so I know I did not give you this advice, and I regret it now, because I bet it's probably the second, if not most important thing that mattered for me to get support rank up. Because it's not about the skill. It's all about the support rank up. You get that to be, a lot of the times they'll join you if you meet one of their two requirements, or they'll just ask to join you in the middle of your week.
Week.
But what you need to do is you need to keep asking people to join you on mission assistance. And then you either have them set up as an adjutant, or you just keep their unit glued to your main character.
Mm-hmm.
So that way, like any missions you go on with someone assisting in, you know, with mission assistance, they're going to build up support, whether they're an adjutant or in battle right beside you. And that support does actually carry over, even though they're not part of your class.
Ah, curious. Okay.
So.
Well, I'm sorry I had to murder you in a volcano, Ash. And Ferdinand, I'm sorry I stabbed you to death on a bridge. there's some others.
What, really?
There's some others. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Damn, this game gets dark.
Yeah, I'm slaughtering students right and left. And it's all because of my weakness of character, apparently.
Like, without going into too deep into spoiler territory, mm-hmm. I regret the fact that you can recruit basically everyone, because it means taking it away, like the gut-wrenching feeling of having to kill characters because of, you know, differing ideologies.
Yeah. There's some interesting dialogue that may, I mean, I assume it's probably not conditional on if you've recruited everybody, but there's definitely dialogue I've encountered with Dorothea where she's like, if I encounter a friend on the battlefield, like on the opposite side, is it okay for me to like run or what is it? I guess desert from the battlefield. And I was like, it's understandable. And, you know, it got me some support points. But there are definitely students that address that issue of like conflicting against their old classmates.
It's like, I talked about this to some degree on the last, in the previous episode, and I'm not sure if I talked about it with you in Slack, Scott, but I think one of my biggest issues is that the game stripped away the possibility of having to re-recruit characters, which, like, recruiting characters in the middle of the battle is, like, one of the quintessential things of Fire Emblem.
And that's how you end up redoing a playthrough 6 or 7 times because you keep killing the person you're supposed to talk to.
Right. And it if you're not working with a guide, it delivers a degree of, as you put it, replayability, because you might not realize that this evil-looking dude is someone that you can recruit. You just have to have, like, the, you know, the baby whiny thief talk to the guy, and then apparently mm-hmm. they're good friends or some bullshit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would have liked it that after, and I know Cookie knows about this, but after the second act, everyone that you have recruited stays with you, which I don't think makes a lot of sense from a narrative standpoint, but whatever, doesn't matter. Apparently your lasting impression is that crazy and big that everyone decides to stick with you, and as a result, it robs the game, or like the story, the narrative, of the opportunity to have, you know, the main character run into these former pupils or students and be like, hey, why don't you guys join me? And then them having like their own inner conflict, you know, before ultimately joining you, assuming you had like support rank or whatever up by that point.
That's a good idea.
It is.
You should make video games.
I should have directed this game, huh?
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's definitely an argument to be made that you never forget your first hot teacher. And so you do leave a lasting impression on these kids that is stronger than the turmoil of war.
Well, so like I am right to say or to assume that you are into the second act now, Scott, right?
Yes, I've delved into the second act, and I know that this is where the three stories really deviate between, you know, Golden Deer, Blue Lions, Black Eagles. I'm thinking, without spoiling anything, I definitely chose the most quintessential good route because of how things have developed for the Black Eagles and the Blue Lions. I really think that they, I really think that they're going to have a harder time doing a good thing at the end of the war.
I don't know, man. I guess it really boils down to when you see a trolley running down a set of tracks and there's 5 people on the tracks and you could pull a lever and the trolley would go down a separate set of tracks, killing only one person, would you?
No. I think this is the trolley problem, but here is the tricky part, is then there's a third track upended that safely moves the trolley around everybody, and nobody gets hurt at all, except for Ferdinand on the bridge and Ash in the volcano. And so far, that seems to be my experience. I'm very much enjoying the second act for the Golden Deer. Truly, my only complaint, story-wise, with the decision is that my leader by far has the ugliest fucking facial hair and outfit I've ever seen. He's got like the padded stitch pants and a bunch of medals just like dangling from his hip and an unfinished chin strap for his facial hair. And I gotta say, the charm is still there, but the look is gone.
Did you feel like the actual narrative, the script, the dialogue, whatever, leading from Act 1 to Act 2 was as strong as the rest of the dialogue?
I think the story dialogue is sometimes a little hit or miss for me on how much I like it. With the Golden Deer, I seem to get probably what I imagine is the most outside perspective of anything, because with Claude always scheming, all of my interactions with the storyline from a Golden Deer perspective is one of us being like, what the hell's going on? None of us know anything. We need to learn these secrets, and then no secrets are learned, and we rinse and repeat for like the next monthly task or chapter.
Okay.
So, yeah. So I don't know if there's that much to pitch. Like, there's a reveal that is necessary, I think, for all three houses to move into Act Two. But besides that, almost every other thing that's going on, I think, behind the scenes is something that the Golden Deer are not privy to in almost any way. And so I'm playing the most ignorant house, I think, by far.
Okay, have you heard, this is maybe the last of my like spoiler-ish questions. Have you heard about anyone using the phrase those that slither in the darkness or something like that?
Yeah, I've heard nothing of the sort.
Okay. I think it's slither in the darkness. Those that slither in the darkness or something stupid like that.
I mean, I would remember a phrase even adjacent to that, and I do not, which means I haven't been exposed to it.
I'm currently playing through Blue Lions right now, and I'm having seen the story from the Black Eagle perspective, mm-hmm. I feel the least amount of motivation to play the Blue Lions. But
why is it? Because they get I guess I don't want to spoil anything on my end, but the Blue Lions in my playthrough are kind of like moot as a presence in Fodlan for Act Two.
I'm assuming that they are probably serving a separate entity. If like the narratives are somewhat similar, they are helping. I don't know. I don't know what to say. Obviously, there are two houses, it sounds like at least, that there are two houses if the Golden Deer are serving as the outsiders and the other two houses or nations might be at war.
I don't know how to... Yeah, okay. I'd say that's fair.
And so I imagine the conflict that I faced in the Black Eagle route is probably similar to the conflict that is happening in your route. So I think like a lot of the events in this game happen more or less the same way in all three routes, with the exception that any character or like anything that your protagonist does, it empowers that side, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. It's like a complementary gameplay where wherever you choose to put your protagonist, you're going to be like, if we fight on a battlefield and I play Golden Deer and you play Black Eagles, like maybe I get positioned on the north and you get positioned on the south, the way the map is set up for that or the story interaction. But
right.
Where the protagonist goes is essentially which side is going to progress forward through that conflict.
And so with that in mind, I guess I'm not really establishing anything by talking about this. I'm just thinking to myself that your situation is probably similar, except now we get to see, if I were playing Golden Deer, I would see what Claude's motivations and what he actually wants to do, because, you know, obviously their plans and Blue Lion's plans don't reach fruition because you're playing as the other side. Anyways.
I must say that he seems like, for someone who uses poison and is like very scheming, he probably has the most like pure or noble goal, I think, out of the three houses for sure. I don't see how the other two have a noble goal. In comparison?
I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, after playing Black Eagle Route, I feel like there is not much that can be, that can sway me from thinking that if I had to choose one of the three sides in this conflict, or really one of the two sides in this conflict, at least through my perspective, I think Edelgard, or Edelhart, as I kept saying in the first part of our past episode, I think she's in the right. That's what makes it so interesting.
Yeah, that's a, I guess that means it's a good constructed story or conflict if you can be swayed to have sympathy for whatever side you're on.
Neil's going to beat this in 2 weeks, and then for Blue Lions, he's going to be like, man, it was so touching. The Blue Lions story. Blue Lions forever.
Dude, I don't know. I mean, so you don't know about some early shit that's exposed about Dimitri, unless you play as his house. But like, you may or may not have noticed talking to Felix, who is one of the people under Blue Lions. But Felix hates Dimitri.
He calls him the Boar Prince.
The wild boar. Yeah, he keeps alluding to the fact that Dimitri is fucking crazy and should probably be put down. And he does so for good reason. So like,
and that's why I invited Felix to my team.
and so, like, when I started playing as Black Eagles, so I started playing like each of the three houses a little bit before finding out that there's New Game Plus, right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really get that much like concern over Claude. I didn't get that much concern over Edelgard. Dimitri, on the other hand, and maybe it was like I had to get another month or so in because I didn't find out about these things until I was on my New Game Plus route. But like, Dimitri has some shit to him. He's carrying some baggage that I don't think the other two characters do. And maybe this is a story of like redemption for him or something. But like, I did not get exposed to any of this outside of Felix being like a fucking wild boar over here. Like the boar prince. Watch out for him. Like, we have him cornered. You know what happens when you corner a wild beast? It's like, Jesus, dude. Okay, I guess I should be careful around this guy. But like, you really don't get any justification for how, like, for the reason that he treats this character with such disdain until you're actually playing his chapter, and like a month or two in, like someone like points their finger at him and is like, hey, it's like that one time you did that horrible thing. And Dimitri's like, yeah, I guess I did do that horrible thing.
High fives all around.
So I don't know. I don't think I'm going to sympathize with him for that, for like some of these reasons. Like, unless the game is purposely building up this redemption arc for him or something, which could very well be the case. But it makes less sense to not have this play a bigger part of the story when you're playing as the other houses, unless he is never meant to be seen as like a primary antagonist for like Golden Deer, for instance.
Yeah, the Golden Deer, at least as far as I've experienced, doesn't give a shit about Dimitri at any point in time, including my own character Byleth. I'm I think 50 hours in. I got a ways to go, but I think maybe I'm closer to wrapping up. I'm not sure, maybe I'm only 40 hours in. I've got a lot of time. I know that much. And I keep playing.
My number's kind of inflated, I think, because I keep leaving the Switch on and idle. But like, I was like 80 something hours in before I beat it. But again, I'm sure like 10 of those hours might have just been from like it sitting on in the dock.
You sure it wasn't you just staring at the the goals chart and just being like, what do I build these kids into? Because I've definitely had it where I'm just like struggling with indecision. It's like, I could focus on the Lance and finish this early, or maybe if I do these two things, they'll finish roughly at the same time and I can move on to this new class, which you guys are finishing out your classes, right? When you class into a new character type, like if you get to the end, you get a skill that you can equip. regardless if you are that class or not. So by switching to a class and then switching to another one before you've completed it, you don't get the benefits out of that nearly as much.
Yeah, sometimes it depends, though, that like maybe you're just using that class. Like maybe you've turned someone into a thief so you can build up their bow. Well, I don't know what context would actually make you want to do that. So maybe you don't want to max out thief, because I think the skill you get for thief is literally...
it's steal, and it sucks.
Yeah, there's no point to you steal. It's dumb. Like, you just kill the person, and you get the item anyways, I think.
Well, and no character is, like, holding on to extra items like other Fire Emblem games in which stealing is actually viable. Definitely, like, there's definitely some combat... I think this game has improved the combat in almost every way, but that is maybe the one like huge flaw I saw when I had a thief character, is that the steal use is completely arbitrary and almost useless. And like dedicating to that over, say, a mercenary, which gives you roughly the same type of stat growth, is just kind of silly, because Vantage is so much better of a skill to equip.
At first, when you said, like, are you sure you weren't spending your time staring, I thought you were going to bring up the tea parties, so.
Oh,
I also thought the tea parties.
I think the tea parties are fun for trying to figure out if you know the character's personality that well or not. It's the same thing that we experienced on the DS, though. It reaches a level of creepy when you've successfully had a perfect tea time, and then you can just stare at the character model.
And then joke and banter. Or
giggle.
And then they can yell, sensei! Or professor, if you're playing with the English VO.
Yeah. I've been doing the English VO, which the voice acting is excellent. I just try not to look at the lips too closely when they do it.
It's also not a good time for
GIFs. It's synced as best as it can be, but it's definitely it's synced to the Japanese, not to the English.
I was wondering if they'd be running like some sort of script or something that had the sound actually influence the mouths. Like, if you saw any of the previews for Bloodstained, they did that as well. And I remember like one of the first previews for Bloodstained, they had the sensitivity too high, so people would be talking in full sentences, but their mouths would just remain open the entire time. Anyways, though, I guess that's not the case for Three Houses.
No, you can tell it's the Japanese for sure, because there are definitely segments in which the voiceover is still occurring and the mouth has just shut, because they can say whatever that line or dialogue is in Japanese faster or more efficiently. And so they just like cram another word and a half into like the closing mouth of a character before the voiceover cuts. It fits relatively well, but it does not hold up under scrutiny. But the voice acting's very good. If we had to choose between good voice acting in a fully voiceover game versus pretty textures, I'm actually super happy with the voiceover work. It's phenomenal. There are some Raphael scenes that are just like, his voice actor makes them amazing. I'll try the Japanese, but I don't know if it'll be as good as the English has actually been. If we're going to move on from Three Houses, the only other things I really wanted to note were that magic as a renewable resource is, I hope that it never leaves from the Fire Emblem series from here on out. The fact that you can just restore magic uses, you have less, but you don't have to buy a tome at the shop. And therefore, you never use Ragnarok because you only have 10 uses of it. And so you take that tome to the end game. Like, now you can just use your three spell slot limit for Ragnarok, and then you'll have it next time around. And I find that much more rewarding and I don't know, viable for magic users. I have a lot more magic units than I expected in this game, I think partially because of that mechanic.
Do you think it's a problem that they gated repairs behind consumable items as well?
No, because you can actually buy those consumables for the most part. I haven't had any issues with like not being able to repair a weapon that I want to use. I have probably 105,000 gold, and so I have more money than I know what to do with in the first place.
How do you have that much money? Like, are you not buying all of the gifts every week?
Yeah, no, I am, but it's really not that much. Like, I think you get, at the level I'm at right now, I'm getting like 7,000 gold a month as a stipend, and then all the gold that I get from doing just the basic battle missions and selling shit that I don't need, I have like a surplus of almost 10,000 gold a month.
That sounds nice. I'm the broke professor. This.
But you're early on too, Cookie. I definitely noticed that there was just a point where I went from having like 20,000 a month available from how I was managing things, jumping all the way up to like 80,000 a month. And so once I like quadrupled those earnings, then I started spending like crazy. And now I can't spend enough. I know what it's like to be wealthy finally.
How many weeks do you fight?
Once to twice a month, depending on what events are going on in the month. Okay. And I think when I play the game again, I may actually dedicate I may dedicate about the same amount of time, or maybe a little less, and I'll start doing more exploring at the start and then more battles later in, because improving Byleth's skills has definitely been like the thing that I underestimated how much time that would take and effort.
I mean, maybe it's just the way, like the differing ways that we play. But I honestly like was just trying to rush through the end game because I already had all of my support levels maxed. Mm-hmm. And so I just had a shit ton of free time that I regret not just going around and getting trained on now. But a shitload of free time, and I had no reason to buy any more gifts. So like at towards the end of the game, I had a bunch more money, but like I never had enough money to just repair everything or enough smithing stones to do that. But I also kept everything. Like I never sold any equipment because I might use it later.
You can sell like a ton of fish. And so you could like, You can honestly just catch fish and sell the fish and buy more bait and catch fish and sell the fish. And like, as long as you're good at the fish game and you're not dealing with the console slowdown that makes a lot of my perfect fishing runs devolve into just good because it like skips the frame for a second, which pisses me off so much. I think you could have an infinite money source, and I don't even fish that much, but I'm pretty sure it's a exploitable option.
That's like maybe the most damning thing about this game. They built a game that is like, it's either not efficient or they built a game that requires more horsepower than the Switch can handle.
Yeah.
And like it gets progressively worse in areas.
Do you think the fishing game really requires that much horsepower?
I don't understand what the fuck is wrong with their code here, but like You'll be running around, and if there are seven people in one area, like it feels like you're going through Korok Forest on a Wii U in Breath of the Wild. Or not Korok Forest. Is it Korok Forest?
Sure.
Breath of the Wild on the Wii U.
Yeah, but yeah, like,
this doesn't make any sense. I'm so confused.
It's like you're playing the Wii U.
But there is a particular area on the Wii U version of Breath of the Wild that just destroys the game. Like you slow down sub 15 frames a second. And I think it's the forest where you can, you know, do the Master Sword quests in.
That's possible. I didn't even know that came out for the Wii U, but that makes sense.
Oh, seriously?
It's what speedrunners actually play it on.
And it's how they do all of the emulation, like the Breath of the Wild co-op mode and stuff are all built around the Wii U version.
The more you know.
Again, like, I really hope. All right. I don't know if we talked that much about the Breath of the Wild sequel that was announced, but the thought just occurred to me, what if that's a two-player game? And you can play as Zelda or Link.
That'd be amazing. I realize I like Breath of the Wild.
Link. Was that your question?
What if you get to play as Link in this new Zelda game?
You said, yeah, the new Zelda game, if it was two players, like, if you can play as Zelda or Link.
No, and rather, like,
wait, is Link now a...
like, both. Mm-hmm. But no, I get you. I don't know, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I think that'd be really good. I've actually realized that I think Breath of the Wild is such a good game that as a, like, here's to being friends for 20 years or so, I actually bought a buddy of mine a Switch and Breath of the Wild just out of excitement that he's going to have for playing that game.
Damn, we need to be better friends. Fuck.
You should have waited until the Switch Lite came out. Saved yourself $100.
See, I actually really considered that, but I realized that some people have had issues with the Joy-Cons, right? And there's a lot of paranoia about that, Joy-Con analog stick getting busted. And I didn't want to buy a cheap handheld version where the Joy-Con was going to get busted. So I just went for the whole thing. I went for what I knew worked, I guess.
Right. What colors?
What did I do? I think I gave him the ugly colors, so the blue and the red.
Because you're basic.
I like the personally, I'm keen on the just carbon gray kind of color. Though the Splatoon green and pink is probably the undeniable best.
Yeah.
Well, Cookie, I know you've played an hour of Fire Emblem, but what other games have you gotten into this week?
So before I talk about games, I just have to mention, because I don't think I mentioned it last week, have either of you started The Boys?
No, I've been curious about it. I really like the premise.
On Amazon?
Yes.
I know nothing about it.
It's about shitty heroes.
Yeah, it's pretty much The Watchmen, except for...
Wait, no, it's nothing like The Watchmen.
Yeah. it gives me...
If you didn't know what The Watchmen was, and you assumed it was about people watching superheroes and making sure they did their jobs and weren't, you know, corrupt assholes, then you would be right.
I say The Watchmen because it's more of a gritty take on the superhero life.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, like, hey... You get to see the you get to see behind the cloth in The Boys. Let me just give you this, Scott, the inciting incident in The Boys. You're following mild-mannered Joe Schmo, who just got asked to his girlfriend just asked him to move in with him.
It's this scene, yeah.
And he is so ecstatic. And then everything goes in slow motion, and you kind of just see a blood spray on him.
Mm-hmm.
And it slowly pans over to where the girlfriend was standing. And it's just an eviscera of gore as you see her jaw floating in slow motion. The character, who was so happy about his girlfriend asking to move in, looks down at his hands as he's still holding his girlfriend's hands. And then you look over, panning further to see that a superhero has just run through the girlfriend. Super speed.
Oh.
And he says, oh God, I can't stop. I can't stop. I have to go. And then he zooms off.
Oh Jesus.
It is about... Then the show takes a spin and says, yeah, this is going to be kind of like the collateral damage behind... like superhero things that happen because
okay, so this is what the Incredibles tried to follow as their like inciting premise for the first movie.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a little less gritty than the Incredibles.
Just a little less gritty.
I mean, the premise is that they're like, they form a group of people that are essentially just trying to kill superheroes, right?
Yeah. After a while, you find out that the boys are not the superheroes, the Seven, which are basically the world's Justice League,
but instead
a group of people that are just out to kill supers.
So it's focused on those people?
Yes, with a side story of a small town girl from rural Iowa has superpowers and she just got accepted into the Seven. So you also get to follow her life and journey of, you know, female in the spotlight. Harvey Weinstein did.
Oh.
Yeah, I saw some clips where it's like they're trying to shove like a more revealing outfit onto her because essentially it'll just market better. And she's like, what the fuck does this have to, I mean, not verbatim, but like, what does this have to do with saving people?
Right, because she's from Iowa. She would never curse.
We all know people from Iowa are virtuous and innocent, okay?
Yeah.
Having lived in Omaha, Nebraska, Council Bluffs is a constant reminder of the good life. This is lost on anyone that's not from the area, obviously.
Oh boy, but our Midwestern listeners will really enjoy it.
So how many episodes is The Boys, and does it actually conclude in a neat way, or is it totally like, well, here's the cliffhanger?
Big cliffhanger. Yeah,
so The Boys is 8 to 12 episodes. I don't remember how many episodes. Me and Lizzie have gotten 2 episodes in, and one day they were both an hour long, and they were like, we've got to slow down. And life just happened to get busy, so we haven't watched any since. Okay. But it's kind of amazing, the first 2 episodes so far, and what's been going on, and the premise that they're setting up.
Okay. I can dig it.
Sorry. But games I have been playing, Black Desert Online is having a open beta this weekend for the PlayStation 4. So by the time you are listening, dear viewers, it's over. And it kind of, it's nice so far. Like, I've maybe like been playing for about 12 hours-ish in my spare time with, I've got 3 characters created. One I was running with my wife and brother. One I kind of decided to run by myself to like get to know the ins and outs of the game, and the third character was just so I could experience a different class. They've got 6 of like all the classes that are available on the PC version. Their classes they have are the warrior, the ranger, the sorceress, berserker, witch, and wizard,
mm-hmm.
which are the same thing. One's just male, one's female. The online beta caps at the actual level cap of the full game, so you have access to the full game. The first 3 areas in the full game are also available to explore, so you can pretty much get all the way up to end game this weekend if you want. It's got a really crazy fast leveling system, a very detailed character creator slash I'm getting really deep into their property thing that they have. So like you can invest nodes into certain areas of the world, so you mm-hmm. can invest like time and money and effort into certain areas of the world to develop it, buy a home, work the land, but you're like hiring people out to do this for you.
So
I decided that I wanted to find a horse, so I bought one. And the way the horses work in this is very unique to other, way the mounts work in this is very unique to other games, in such that the mounts are real. So if you say park your mount somewhere, it is just going to be in that field until you get back, unless a monster comes up and kills it.
Mm-hmm.
So
in which case
are mounts important or rare enough that if you lost a mount, like you would be devastated, or is it just like, I guess I'll just go buy another horse?
And it's then about 10,000 gold,
which is a lot, I'm going to assume,
which is not a lot.
Oh, okay. So you do have a horse named Sally Six then.
At least the way the betas being run and how they're handing out the gold bars. Each gold bar you can exchange for 100,000 gold.
Oh.
So after a while, you're just like, all right, I got like 600K. I'm gonna go buy something. Then there's, I ended up buying a boat, and boat is very generous for what the raft ended up looking like. I was like, okay, I'll just spend 35K on this. Oh, well, I'm not going to try and take this out to sea. I'm just going to put that back in the dock.
Like, I guess what I wanted was technically a yacht.
They have a interesting... So, you know, in RPGs, the... oh, God, what's the friendship mechanic, the love mechanic, the mechanic that you can marry said NPC?
Romancing?
Yeah, except for it's a conversation mechanic. So the more random NPCs you talk to, the more you have to talk about with more important NPCs. So you can have conversations to get their affinity towards you higher. I'm trying to max out one person's, but like you can only talk to them so much in a given 5 minute span before they're like, all right, we've talked. Just go away. So like you gather information by just like talking to random passerby or NPCs that give you like the one sentence blurbs of, oh, hi, how you doing? Or this area's got these things in it. So then you just start going up to important NPCs and you're like, conversation. And you get to choose different topics and they'll either be receptive to topics or not receptive to topics. So,
like
so far...
cute monks.
Exactly.
Or the couple at the courtyard, or promising allies.
Weirdly enough, you like select pictures of the people you talked with. No, excuse me. You select pictures of different types of enemies. So it's like this type of goblin, goblin banners, goblin wizards, this type of goblin. And then it corresponds with the picture you got, it corresponds with the person you talked with. So I don't quite fully understand it, but it has been an enjoyable playthrough so far. I think depending on what my older brother decides, I may end up getting it for PlayStation when it comes out.
Is it not free to play?
It is not free to play. It's like $30.
Really? I thought it was free to play on computer.
It is not. I also bought it during the Steam summer sale for $15. So I do own it on PC. If it does, though, I hope it ends up having crossplay, so that way I don't have to rebuy it. But I doubt it will, because the PC version's got like 15 other classes. But then again, this is just an open beta, so they may just be keeping it all locked in, locked behind other things.
So this is going to be a separate server. I take it there's not crossplay to PC?
As of right now, there's no announcement of it. I think the Xbox version does crossplay. Let me look that up.
It's okay if you don't happen to know. For now, that's fine.
But that's all I've been really playing video game wise.
And what about you, Scott?
It's all been dedicated to Fire Emblem very recently, but I have actually I think the week before when I had my tennis tournament, you guys recorded the second half of 127. I had dipped another hour and a half into the puzzle game The Witness, which I think I brought up quite a while ago. And like all good puzzle games, at least in my experience, leaving and then coming back after like a long period of time actually makes solving some of the puzzles much easier. I'm still slowly working away at this game. I really enjoy it. I think it's such a like peaceful and enjoyable hour to spend doing something. The only flaw with it really is it normally feels like after I put in an hour, I have to go do something. And so I just get going on a puzzle only to lose that steam and have to kind of start again the next time I go to play it. But it is... it's probably one of the most, I would assume one of the most universally enjoyable experiences I think you could suggest to someone in video gaming, because it is simply solve these puzzles in this beautiful environment, and the act of solving the puzzles is just so satisfying, especially in a game that I think it has, like, I don't know exactly how many puzzles, but maybe 500 total puzzles or so that you can interact with. And the level of difficulty and complexity is all over the map too. There's very simple stuff all the way to puzzles, and yeah, Cookie's eyes are bulging in recognition that, yeah, there are some puzzles that you don't even know it's a puzzle until you've activated it. And that's like, I'm not kidding. That's absolutely true. That there are times in which I've started a puzzle and been like, wait, this is a puzzle? This whole thing?
It's like when the puzzles start to come out or become, you become aware of the puzzles in the environment itself, right?
That's right.
Is that
okay,
like the
so
big
yeah.
twist or something to The Witness?
No.
I mean,
I don't know what the big twist to The Witness is yet. I'm not far enough in.
And when I say big twist, I don't mean like a twist from the story, because I think all that is just a fucking bunch of soliloquies that are supposed to make you feel something on an existential level.
And that's why they're all Alan Watts.
Is that not the mechanical twist to the game?
I guess that could be a mechanical twist to the game.
Go ahead, Cookie.
I was just going to say, the whole coming back to it later, don't you just forget some of the rules of some of the puzzles? Like when they start intermingling the dot puzzle with the line puzzle, when they start intermingling some of the advanced puzzles?
I haven't encountered too many mixed puzzles yet. I feel like I've solved at least 2 to 3 areas on the island, and I've encountered so far all separate puzzles, or the ways that the puzzles have overlapped have been pretty obvious, but I absolutely have that fear. And otherwise, I like 100% agree with every single thing Cookie has said. It is a twist when you see that the environment is also a puzzle at times. But to back up his other statement, who knows? There could be other twists. It's just so hard to make forward progress in that game. And it's satisfying when you do, but it's tough.
Have you run into the statue, the people yet?
Statue people. Yes, actually, I think I know exactly what you're talking about. I have not solved that one. I think I'm stuck on it right now, actually.
Have you gotten all the beams of light to the top of the mountain yet?
No, I have not.
Yeah, there's so much.
There is
nom-like flashbacks just thinking about that game. Sometimes it's like, oh my God, how'd you solve that puzzle? Let me take a picture of this real fast. I'm just going to cheat later. I've been working on this thing for 3 hours.
And yet the like when you find the solution to a puzzle or you find the hint to it, it is it's so endorphin like heavy in its release. I was literally walking around this like pagoda / shrine temple area for 30 minutes, making zero progress, seeing a bunch of things that I thought, oh, these are absolutely like keys to the puzzle that I'm going to do. And it turns out, nope. They were keys to a completely different puzzle I still haven't found. But instead, I found I found like suggestions in the like patterns on a different part of the lattice in the pagoda, and I found the puzzles that those associate to. And I was like, okay, this is good. In this room with 10 puzzles, I can recognize and solve 4 of them, 40%. But let's scale it on a, like, let's grade it on a curve. I think I just got a B on this room. Like, now I'm gonna walk away and turn around and, oh, what's that? The temple itself is a puzzle. Like, it's nice
exactly
that there are at
about.
Least. Yes, exactly. And I think that's the thing that's so cool. And I hope that Cookie and I both make more forward progress on, because I feel like it's a game where you can, the experiences are going to be pretty similar from person to person. And so there's just like so much about it that's memorable in the puzzles and worth discussing then.
Just wait till you get to the psychedelic flower puzzles.
Yeah, I haven't done, I don't think I've done any flower puzzles yet, so I'll keep my
mind blown. It turns out those flowers you walked by were a puzzle all along.
I mean, they do some really cool stuff. There's visual, there's audio puzzles that are really interesting. The audio puzzles are actually kind of tricky. But it's one of those things too, like, you don't know that there are audio puzzles in the game until you walk around a bunch. You're like, wait, why does the sound change when I walk through this specific spot?
Why does it sound like that sort of loop? Oh, I've got to hit whatever the activation button is facing this way. Yeah, that's a puzzle.
Yeah.
Okay, it was squawk, chirp, chirp, squawk. Oh, car horn with a squawk underneath?
You're like, why is there a car horn in this aviary? Yeah, it's a really... Neil, I think you'd like the game, but I honestly feel like I'd recommend this game to anybody. Instead of doing a Sudoku puzzle in the morning, like, you should play The Witness instead, because I think it'll be more rewarding in the long term.
I think you can get it on Android or iOS, too.
That seems entirely plausible.
I was going to say, I don't think I'll ever play The Witness again on the PS4, but if I could get The Witness on, like, the Switch or my phone,
yeah, Lunch Break will be a whole new thing.
Or better yet, if I could get the Switch in VR, like, if you could get it on the Oculus Quest, would that not be a cool way to play it?
God, that would be the best way to play it.
Right?
Maybe don't touch anything all over again. Oh, I guess, Scott, I was playing a game called Please Don't Touch Anything. It is a game where you're stuck in a room in VR with just a big console and a button, and you push the button and things happen, but you're not supposed to touch anything. So I've set off nuclear explosions. I've literally destroyed the world a couple of different ways. Listen to the last episode to get the full details.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's great that episode 128 is going to hype 127 part two.
Well, so did you play anything aside from The Witness, Scott?
No, that's about all I've got.
Okay, I'm going to hold off on a few things I've been playing. There's a bunch of games that have come out that apparently just I forgot they came out or just lost track of time. Partly the trip to Colorado probably caused some of that.
Please, both of you guys, build up your gaming background, because I'm literally going to play Fire Emblem probably another 30 to 40 hours, and then by the time I'm done with that, it's going to be Zelda Link's Awakening, which I won't have much to say. I'm just playing that for my own entertainment and nostalgia.
That's it for this episode of Fancy Ramen 128. You can reach us at podcast@fancyramen.com. No emails. We did have some choice spam email, which maybe we'll read on another episode.
Feel free to leave us a like and review on your favorite podcast directory. More than likely iTunes podcast, because that's the only one I'd be able to read them off of once we get more.
And assuming your friends don't try and stand you down from your goal in a volcano or on a bridge or wherever else you might be, you can tell them about the Fancy Ramen podcast, a viable alternative to facing me in Mortal Kombat.
I'm Cookie.
I'm Scott.
I'm Neil. Have a great week, everybody.